Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Disc Swapper's Elbow, written by Steve Capps, January 1984. One of the more common afflictions of early Macintosh users was the dreaded disk swapper's elbow, caused by a disk copying operation run amok. Disk swapping was a necessary evil given a 400 kilobyte floppy disk, 128 kilobytes of RAM, and a single floppy drive. If a user wanted to make a copy of a disk, she had to eject the source disk, insert a blank one, format it, drag the source disk over the new disk, and then the finder would copy data piece by piece with the necessary swapping. A typical application on a 128 kilobyte Mac had about 85 kilobytes of memory available. The rest was used by the system, mostly for the bitmap display. A simple calculation shows that copying a 400 kilobyte disk should involve about 5 or 6 swaps. 5 disk swaps was barely tolerable, but as early Finder users will remember, occasionally it would take well over 20 disk swaps. You would start a disk copy and hold your breath during the 5th, and hopefully final, swap. If the Mac dutifully disgorged the floppy for a 6th time, you would convince yourself that you miscounted, cross your fingers, and hope for the best. By the 7th swap, you would start cursing because you knew you were trapped, and you began wondering about investing in a second floppy drive. Even though the whole Finder was only 46 kilobytes of code and had about 10 kilobytes of overhead, the remaining 30 kilobytes of memory was too small for practical copying. I had to break up the code into 2 chunks, the bare minimum for copying, and all the rest. Then I had to carefully flush out all data that was cached in memory, preload the small chunk of code responsible for disk copying, and coalesce the balance of RAM. Usually the Finder ended up with 75 kilobytes of free memory and things worked as planned. But sometimes the system would mysteriously reload the larger chunk of the Finder code, fragment the free memory, and cause another case of disk swapper's elbow. It took me a long time to figure out what happened because we had rarely seen this in testing. There were a few bug reports of this problem that we were never able to reproduce. The bug reports sounded like this. Copied a disk. It took 20 plus swaps. Tried a second time. It was fine. The reason this bug was so elusive was that we were all expert mouse users and usually skipped the crucial misstep. When anybody first starts using a mouse, dragging is one of the more difficult things to do. It's actually quite awkward to click down, move the mouse while holding down the button, and then release. Quite often, beginners accidentally release the mouse button while dragging. In the Finder, this meant that you could drop an icon that you were dragging. You rarely thought about this, unless you happened to drop it over a folder and it disappeared, and you would immediately pick up the icon and continue the drag. It turned out that if you dropped the disk icon during a disk copy, you would induce the bug. Since all of the team members had been using the mouse for years by that time, we rarely dropped icons, which is why we could never reproduce the problem. To support the user's spatial memory, the Finder always remembered where icons were located on the desktop. When you dropped the icon, even for half a second, the Finder would dutifully record its location. The routine to save the icon's location was, as you probably guessed, in the large portion of the Finder's code. The Finder would carefully massage the memory for copying, and then belatedly discover the icon's location hadn't been flushed out. It would then blindly call the routine to flush it, and you now know what would happen. I introduced this bug at about 2 o'clock a.m. on the day we built the final system software disks. This bug was caused by a fix to a much more egregious bug, so it was definitely the lesser of 2 evils. Really. A floppy named written by Bruce Horn, January 1984. After the Macintosh was introduced in January 1984, We were all excited to go out to computer dealers and see people's first reactions to our pride and joy. Up to this point, computer users were accustomed to the IBM PC's command prompt, and we were more than curious as to how people would react to our point-and-click, drag-and-drop graphical user interface. I was especially interested in seeing how people liked using the Finder and what they found particularly compelling or difficult. We went to quite a few stores in the week after the introduction and found that, without exception, every Mac's floppy disk had a garbage name. They were all named something like as if someone had just randomly typed characters to see what would happen, which is exactly what they were doing. In the Finder, the startup disk would appear on the desktop in the top right-hand corner, ready to be opened, and the Finder would initially select it. Once selected, typing would replace the current name of the disk, following the modeless interaction model that I had learned in the Smalltalk group from Larry Tesler. This meant that whatever anyone typed when they first came up to the Macintosh would end up renaming the disk. We had done some user testing, but apparently not enough. Our users were already too experienced with the Mac to make this type of mistake. Apparently, we didn't ask enough people to find out if the Finder passed the mom test. That is, would your mom be able to figure it out without help? I hurried back to the office and worked on a new release of the Finder that would fix this problem, along with others that I had discovered. The solution was to require the user to take an extra step before she was allowed to rename the disk. Finally seeing how people used the Mac made it clear to me that there were, in fact, good reasons to have modes, at least in some cases, and it certainly gave me a taste of humble pie.